tough, but just I didn't really have a shot in it yesterday. We talked about the idea being that there was a field that may have been plowed, may have not been plowed. There was at some point a kever in that field. That field was surrounded by a tsiun. Again, just to give everyone a background, the tsiun is a cement outline of a box surrounding a presence of tuma. To warn people, there is a presence of tuma under this ground. Do not walk over the ground. You will become tame. So tumas oil, which is the presence of the tuma shooting through the ground upward until it's blocked. Leave it there. So the Gemara answers, was this field plowed or not? If it was plowed, we have tumas oil. The body's still there, we just don't know where. Or the body was not plowed. The field may have been plowed, and thus the body would have been chopped up, but not enough for tumas oil. It would be a base up pras of shenechras, bokever. You could do nifuach, the blow on the ground and walk through it. I'm just going in the background because in that pshat, it's going to be the top of our umid anyway. So he said the case is, where there are trees there, you knew you plowed it. So he said maybe the trees are only outlining the edge, but the body could be in the middle. So we answered two things. The case is where the trees are all over the field, so we know that he plowed the entire field. The second one is that the trees are really outlining the inside of the box, and in the middle there are no trees. So the question would be, maybe the body was located in the middle, and the person who plowed it only plowed around the trees. Okay, that's the top of our umid. We say, the Iboy Seima, Ho Amran, Ein Marchikin Tzin Mamakam Tumashol Lahasid Eseret Yisrael. We said above that you do not distance the outline from the tuma. It should be right along the sides of the tuma. So you see, Rashi Ksavya, that's the only way you can understand that. It's that top Rashi. Look at Rashi on the right side. It's the inside of your Gemara. Rashi Chaf Tes Yud. If you have the Art Scroll, I think they have it, because they bought the Ozva Hadar's daf. So whatever, they bought that. So it's really in the Ozva Hadar brings the Rashi Ksavya. If you don't have that, I don't think you have it. So it says, Rashi there brings. The idea is that we know, therefore, that there is a suffix presence of tuma very close to the outline of the box, even in the presence of the trees. And still, this guy, who knew that there might be a kever there, plowed up that field. It didn't stop him. Even though the fact that there was an outline of a box around that showed that we are mesupik, that there is a presence of tuma, even in that area, very close to the outline, because again, the outline will be as close as we can make it to our presence or suffix presence of tuma. Still, he plowed it. So we see he doesn't care. He'll plow up a grave, this guy. So therefore, we assume that he'll plow the entire field as well. He will plow the entire field, even though the kever could have been inside. We see that this is a guy who will plow up a field, even if a kever's there. So even though he would know that the entire field is in doubt to the presence of a kever, he would have plowed the entire thing. That's the second answer. Okay. And I know that's out of context because it's really finishing up the last discussion. I hope that was sufficient. We really covered that yesterday. Let's continue. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Achi Yisham Zokin Atam Lefisha in Hakobi Kiyim Bedavar. Rabbi Yehuda says that how do you know you have a field? Your Masupik, is there a presence of a kever in this field that we just lost or we forgot really where the kever is located and that's why this whole field is outlined? Or was the field dug up? So we said good indication to know is are there trees there? If there are trees, it was dug up because you would assume he plowed for the trees. And if there are no trees, then you would assume it was not dug up. And therefore, a kever would still be there. You still have tumas oil. You can't blow on the ground and walk through. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, you can't rely on trees. There has to be a talmid chacham, a zakin, or a talmid that would be able to tell you explicitly this field was dug up in order to assume it was dug up and be makel to walk through it, blowing on the ground to avoid contact with an etzem kesa'ur and tumas maga. Okay. So, fine. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Abayi, shmami not, sorvim mirabonin, deikib masa, komili demasa, ale ramya. From here we see that if there's a Talmid Chacham in the city, all matters of the city are his responsibility. It's his responsibility to ensure that we keep track of is this Basic Varis, what is the status of Tuma related to this Basic Varis? Is there Tumas oil in it or not? Any halachic matter of the city, he's Achrayon. And they bring this Gemara when they talk about how the Rav of the city has to be Mochiach. If there's a big pirtza, if there's a big issue in the city, it's his responsibility to take action. They bring that komile demaso ale ramya, right? For good and for bad, you know. You find Rabbi Silber, who says she's stadless and mile demaso very much, you know, the best of the hulu and all these things. But the way they bring it usually is to be mochiach if somebody's doing something wrong. Let's continue. Amar Rav Yehuda, Matza Evan Mitzuyenes, Tachteho Tame. You find a stone that has tzion on it. There's been a plaster on top of it, has been placed on top of this stone. We assume Tachteha Tame, that underneath the stone is Tame, is a presence of Tumah that would be Tumas oil. Now note, above we mentioned that you don't do the tzion right above the Tumah. But when you place the tzion, whatever they would make it, it would be this identifying mark to show Tumah that they would make out of the cement. If they made it on top of a rock, then a person would see it more clearly even before they approach that area. So even if it's directly over the Tumah, it will serve to stop you before you reach the area of Tumah. However, if it's on the ground, on the ground alone, then you are less likely to see it until you step on it or knock into it. So therefore, there, you do it around the Tumah, not directly over. But if it's on a rock, it would be directly over. So if we find the rock and there's a tzion on it, we assume a Tumah is directly under the rock. Shtayim, you find two rocks, one over here, and they both have tzion on them. They both have this cementing mark on top of them. Im yesh sid beinayin, beinayin tameh. If there is also cement in between the rocks on the ground, then we assume that not only under the rocks is Tame, but even between these two areas is also Tame. Now, interestingly, it sounds like you only need the two lines, those two parallel lines of Sid in between those rocks, on the inside between those two rocks. That would be enough to indicate that the in-between would as well be Tame. That's what Rashi says, it would as well be Tame. Fine. But Vimein Sid Beinayin, Beinayin Tor. But if there's no Sid, there's no concrete on the ground in between the rocks, then we would assume that, okay, those are two separate rocks for Tzion, which of Tumah, which is directly underneath them. But the in-between, between those two rocks, is Tahor. V'yafagav d'leke charesh, asks the Gemara, is that true even if the ground between them hasn't been plowed up? You would still say that in-between is Tahor if there's no Sid on the ground between them? V'hatanya, we learned in a brisa, matza evan achas mitzuyenes tachteha tame. You find one stone with tzion. Again, I'm going to keep referring to it as tzion. It's identifying cement mark to show that Tumah is present, right? If you find one stone with tzion on it, then tachteha tame, directly beneath that stone, is Tumah. We assume is Tumah. Shtayim, if you find two, im yesh cheresh b'nei b'nei tor, if the ground between the two stones has been plowed, then we assume that in between them is tor. But the imlov, if it hasn't been plowed, beinayin tameh. And in between the two stones is assumed to be Tumah as well. So fine. So we see that that even if there is not tzion on the ground in between the two stones, there's just tzion on the stones. We assume that the in-between is tameh unless that ground in between them was plowed, which would be an indication that it wasn't. Because most people wouldn't plow up graves. Okay, or even if there was a grave, we assume that it was plowed up and it's gone. That's another good idea. Okay, like we saw earlier, Sadash Nechrash. Okay, let's continue. So, what's the answer? Amar Rav Papa says, Rav Papa, Hacha Kisha Sid Shavuch Arushayan, Umarud Lekan Lekan. That last brisa about having to be plowed or not, that's talking where the Sid was, the concrete was on top of each of the rocks. And dripped, it's clear that it dripped, in a sense, or peeled off onto the inside, onto the ground between the two rocks. It's clearly on the rock as well, and clearly from that plaster dripped down or peeled down onto the in between the two rocks. That's the idea. So there, it's where we do have Sid on the ground between the two rocks. And the above brisa said that when there is Sid on the ground between the two rocks, that shows that beinayin tameh, that in between the two rocks as well as tameh. So in that case, we say, right, Hacha kisha sid shavu chareshein amarud lekan lekan, v'ika cheresh beinayin, beinayin tor. So I would assume tameh unless the ground in between them was plowed. Because if the ground in between them was plowed, I would say, de'imor machmas cheresh hu de'ikbo. I would say that it was through the process of plowing that ground in between that took off, that resulted in the peeling off of the sid, of that of that plaster that was on the Turox. Originally, I would assume it was only on the Turox, not in between. And maybe the plowing process of the ground in between the Turox caused somewhat of a destruction to that sid, and that's why it's on the ground now. But originally, it wasn't placed on the ground to identify a tumah in between them. So in that case, the fact that it was plowed will put, in my mind, the sid that I see on the ground, which would otherwise indicate tumah, it would put it back on the rocks and say, no, that was only a result of plowing. That wasn't an indication originally put there as an indication for tumah in between the rocks. Ve'ilo, then sid de'beni beni uvetame, and if the ground isn't plowed, then lamaisa, at the end of the day, I'll assume that it was intentional that they put the sid both on the rocks and then had that drip onto the ground. They wanted it on the ground as well. And I'll assume that that was intentional for an indication that the tumah in between, there is a presence of tumah in between the two rocks, that it is tameh. The ilo then sid the beni who would be sid in between two rocks, which are brisa above, told us v'tameh that it's tameh. Let's continue. Amar bi asi, meitzarechen mitzuyen hu tameh v'kulas adekula tahira. You have a field. One edge of the field has tsiyun along it, has this cementing line along it. Hu tameh v'kolasada kula tahira. We would assume that that side, that which is either directly close to it or maybe just underneath it, since there's not a sufficient indication, that amount would be tameh, and the rest of the field would be tahor. Shnayim heim tameh v'kolasada kula tahira. Shloisha heim tameh v'kolasada kula tahira. You have two sides, an L, right, of the sid. That's not enough. I would think that that's a sufficient outline of the box, like we find in the sense by Sukkah of Shnayim Kehuchas and Rishus Zvila Tefach, somewhat in Os the Miraglim, traveled Eretz Yisrael in the shape of an L that really already defines and outlines the area. Same as when they bring in. So I would think that that would already be sufficient for the entire field. As it's seen for the field, no, it's only that along that line, either directly underneath it, or maybe we're talking even close to it. Like directly close to it, we would be choshish for tumah. It would be it seems that that is tameh, but the entire field would be tahor. Three, also only along the line or close to the line, is tameh. The entire field is tahor. That doesn't box it in. Arba, if you have four sides, then hain tahirin, then directly underneath the lines, you have a full box. Directly underneath the lines is tahor, and v'kolasad kula tameya. And the entire field is tameh. Because again, as we mentioned above, Damar Emar Chikin Sin Welcome to Mishal Lahavsa this Eretz Yisrael. And the underlying halacha in all of this is this idea that we put the tziyun directly next to the tumah, not far away from it. So therefore, it's not going to be over, it's going to be next to it, right? So therefore, it's not the actual box. When you have the full box, the actual box is not, the actual outline of the box is not tameh underneath it, does not indicate tumah underneath it, it indicates tumah within it. The inside of that box is tumah. Right, but we mentioned that you don't put it too far away. So therefore, because of the halacha, they don't put it too far away from the tumah. So it has to be mamish close to the tumah. So therefore, if I have an L or I have three lines, that's already far. Those lines are far away. That scene is far away from the tumah that would be on the inside of that box. You have to mamish enclose the area to then define it and say that this is somuch to the presence of tumah. This is close to the presence of tumah.
Why is the whole field tummy?
The whole field is tummy when you have the whole box, because that's the best way that you can indicate that whole area. Even though it's not somoch, you might say the whole field, but how else are you going to do it? You can't put sid over the entire field. I mean, that's not what we're trying to do. Just, once you make the box, you have isolated that area and identified that area. Fine, so the entire field is tummy. The box itself would be tohor again, as we mentioned above. Okay. The yoitzin afo akloyim. And note that even though we said above that we do not put the tzion directly above the tumah, when all you have is a straight line, what are you going to do? It doesn't indicate anything specifically, so all it indicates is that which is directly below it. So even though it's not supposed to be done like that, if you were to do it directly above it, we would use a rock, as we already said, and elevate the tzion. If it happens, that's all it indicates to me. Okay, let's continue. V'yoytzenafo aklayim, they would also go out on klayim, right? This would be on cholamoe. They would go out and they would rip out the klayim in the fields. We go out for klayim and cholamoi to take care of klayim. Klayim, again, they sow different types of species together. Raminu, we learn in the brisa that be'echad ba'other mashmien al ashkolim ve'al klayim. This is beginning in Maseches Shkolim. That be'echad ba'other, this is really a brisa actually. They would go out on the first of Adar. They would go out and be mashmien al shkolim v'al klayim. They would inform the public about shkolim, that you have to donate a half a shekel to the Beis Hamikdash for the funds to support Karbanos for the upcoming year, beginning in Nisan. They have a climb, and they would also inform the general public who is now beginning to sow, not to sow climb. Not to sow climb. They already had sowed. They were informing them of the presence of climb being usher that you have to uproot it. That's what they were informing them about. So that's mashmiyan. They would be mashmiyan our shkolim via our klayim. Why do we say mashmiyan? Now, Chazal see the oy of Yisrael pasha shkolim.
Did they actually pull it out themselves, or they just warn people?
They officially on the first of Adar would warn people. At that point, we'll see it later on. They would warn people to say, if you have climb in your fields, it must be destroyed. It must be taken out because climb can occur naturally. So, and there's an issue we already saw in Rabbi Akiva to be makayim it, to maintain it. So you actually should get rid of it. So they would make a declaration, remove the client. They would make that declaration on the first of Adar, and they also declared about the obligation to bring the shkolim. Okay, but Chamisha Asipo, on the 15th of Adar, Karen has a Megillah B'Krochim, they would read the Megillah in walled cities, surrounded by a wall from the days of Yeshua Ben-Nun, as we saw in Megillah. They would read the Megillah on that day, and they would go out on that day to remove any thorns or obstacles on the highways, to fix up the roads, to measure the mikvahs and fix the mikvahs, and to prepare all tzarchi rabim, all public needs. And again, the idea here probably was umetzain and esekvaris as well. They would also place identifying cementing around the kvaris. Right? Again, this would be Kavaras that we would otherwise not know about, not in the graveyard we saw yesterday. That would be Bedos. Fine. And the idea here is that they would do these things because, again, this was Ali Lebrago was going to happen very soon. People were going to be traveling through Yerushalayim, through the streets, and seemingly that's Pshat. People are going to be traveling, Koyanim are going to be traveling through the fields in their Ali Lebrago. Chayv Adam Latayr Satzma Berego. You have to fix the mikvos so people can be toivel. Right? First, that's Matayr himself Berego. Okay. So different things like that. That would be my assumption, according to this price, of why they did it then. The Yoytzen al HaKloyim. And then, on the 15th of Adar, they would go out, like Mr. Meyerwood said, they would actually then go out on the 15th, then they would go out and rip up Kloyim that the owners had not taken out themselves. So, and that's what we're doing here. That's what our Mishnah is claiming was done on Chol HaMoed Pesach, that they would go out and actually rip out. Beis Din would send shluchim, send messengers, to actually go rip out the Kloyim. Okay, so our question is, was the klayim done on Chol HaMoed, or was it done on the 15th? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, Chodam Arkam B'Bochir, Kam B'Ofil, V'Chodam Arkam B'Zroim, Kam B'Yerokas. There were two ideas, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. One of them said that the early crop was pulled out on the 15th of Adar, and the later crop was pulled out, that which came later, was pulled out in Chol HaMoed Pesach. That would be the end of the growth season. We already saw by Nissan, the Pasuk says already that like the grain is at its full growth. We saw in the beginning of Tanis. Fine. V'chod amar kan bizroyim kan biyarokis. And one other opinion says, kan bizroyim kan biyarokis. That here, it's by zroyim, it's by grains, which grow early, and here it's by yarokis, which grow later. So the zroyim, they would take out at the 15th of Adar, they would grow early. The yarokis would have a later season, they're seasonally later, they would be pulled out Chol HaMoed Pesach. Okay, now note that we don't ask about, oh, our Mishnah says that you fix the roads and you measure the mikvahs, you do that in Chol HaMoed Pesach. We only ask on Klayim. Was Klayim Chol HaMoed, wait, it was Klayim Chol HaMoed Pesach, right? We say we did it in the 15th of Adar. We took out the Klayim. It doesn't ask on the other cases. In the other cases also in the Mishnah, we say they fix the roads, they measure the mikvahs, or in Chol HaMoed Pesach. Here it says they did it in the 15th of Adar. And the reason is Pashit, Rashi explains, because by Klayim, if you ripped it up once, you ripped it up. It's not growing in the next 30 days. So if it's ripped up, it's ripped up. The other ones you would have to fix regularly. They may have to fix it a few times a year. So that's not a kasha. Okay, let's continue. So we say, I'll say something real quick after this. This is only talking where it was known that it was not identifiable. They hadn't sprouted, right? It didn't sprout earlier. Nitzan, the sprouting, the bloom. It hadn't sprouted earlier. It wasn't recognizable. But if it sprouted earlier, it was recognizable earlier, and it was known that there was climb in this field, and it had sprouted. It was identified. Yotzna lay, and they would go out earlier for earlier identified climb. That's basically the rule. It wasn't that they had just had these set times. These were times that we assumed that by this time, if you go out, we'll go out in the field to be able to inspect and discover klayim and rip it out. However, if there was known identified klayim at an earlier point, nitzen nicker, the sprouting had been recognizable at an earlier point, yoitz nalein, they would have gone out on that earlier. I'm going to just say one pshat in that Mishnah. Everyone goes to that Mishnah, echeb other mashmina al-shkolim al-klayim. Yeah, we'll say right now. So, what's the connection? Shkolim and Kloyim. Shkolim, Kloyim. My first Tavada, what's the connection? So, the Divrei Yoel says very good in a few places. He says, Shkolim is Machtis a Shekel. Machtis a Shekel, I'm gave a half a shekel to show that I'm only half a person. I'm not the full person. I'm a Chelek of Klal Yisrael. Full shekel is of Klal Yisrael. So, that's the idea. Machtis a Shekel is to promote Achtis. That's really what it did. It promoted Achtis among Klal Yisrael. And that was the donation to the Mishkan of Hashra. So Shechina only happens when Klal Yisrael is ba'achdis. So he says, achdis is great, but you have to make sure who you're connecting yourself to. So it has to be, you can't be mischaber to Rishayim. And that's klayim. Klayim is you have a connection of two things that at the end of the day, it's an avera. So that's what he says. The mashmin al shkolim, promoting the achdis, but not al klayim. And it says in Mesilas Yesharim, it says, l'olam taitav shadam me'rev samabriyas, a person's b'das has to always be with other people. You have to remember with other people, understand people, and relate to people. You can't be in your own thing and, you know, makbid. But he says it's only by people that are usim isibriyas, only people that act like people. The people that are usim isibahema, they act like animals, then you don't have your taitav me'rev behem. That's this idea. The person should never develop an opinion about anyone else or judge anybody else, but you have to be careful for yourself who you have to make the right connections. It's a big thing. All right, let's continue. Okay, so let's continue. So we say, I like that part. All right. Amar b'yasi, amar b'yochim, l'shanu. Fine, we already did that. Let's continue. Why is it that they went on Kolomoid specifically? Meaning, okay, we said that this is a time that it will probably be recognizable. We could identify the Kloyim, but maybe they could have gone out right before Pesach. Why would we wait until Kolomoid exactly to do it? Why was that the Zman? Or go out after Kolomoid, go out after Pesach. That's a better idea. Because it'll be cheaper to hire those people, to hire those workers, to hire those shluchim to go out and rip out the klayim. We have to pay them. So when they're not cholamoi, they're not working. So there's no schar batala. You're not. Otherwise, I'd be making, you know, $100 an hour, and now I'm making only $12 an hour minimum wage with the klayim. You know, you'd have to compensate them for schar batala. The amount that they would otherwise be missing, but here nobody's working, so it's cheap labor. That's why they would hire these people and specifically rip up the klayim during Chol HaMoed. Amar Rav Zavid v'Yisemer Rav Mesharshia Shma Mina. We see from here ki avinan lehu schar mitrumas alishki avinan. We would pay these workers from the funds of the Beis Hamikdash, which were for the upkeep, donated for the upkeep of the Beis Hamikdash and for the bringing of the karbanis. We would donate. We would give them from the funds that would be of the Beis Hamikdash, the Trumas Halishka. Yavinan lahu. That's what we would pay these workers for, and therefore we are very makbid on how much money is spent on them. The Isak Adaitach Midithu Yavinan lahu. Ma'an Afkalan Minayu Kol Kamet Bo Litein lahu. That if you want to say, if you were to think that the owners of the field were penalized and they had to pay the workers' wages, who had to go rip out their klayim because they didn't do it, well, then we wouldn't take any mercy on them. However much it cost, that's how much it costs. We wouldn't try to make it cheaper for them. We wouldn't do them any favors. So, Alamah, you see that these workers were paid from funds of the Beis Hamikdash. Tosef says that, how can you pay him? We worry about the money. He's getting paid for work on Chol HaMoed here. What's the idea? So Tosef says that we find that a worker who doesn't have what to eat, he doesn't have what to eat for that day. He can work on Chol HaMoed for money. He can do that. So that's the case. These are the people that they hired. That's number one, and therefore they can get paid. Number two, he says, is that since it's a mitzvah, for a mitzvah, it's mutter to get paid if you're involved in the performance of a mitzvah. That's what he says, even on Chol HaMoed. Fine. The Tosus, Divrei Maskil, the Mosli Gabon. Okay, let's continue. So we say, this is a general question, but ad kama. How much we know a klayim is a bad mix. It's a mix of A and B that don't belong together to create a hybrid plant. How much of a mix do you need to be klayim? How much of it, much of planting these things together in a way that you plant the seeds together in a way that it will grow together, how much of that is already klayim? Vyad kama, to what extent? This is a mission to the second parak of Klayim, beginning of the second parak of Klayim. If anyone wants to get more into it, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Oisus Yeshnina, like I learned in that mission in Klayim. Kol saw sheish bo roiva zera memenacher yemayet. If you have a saw that you have a fourth of a kav of a different mit, you have a saw, whatever much that is, of A, and you have in that mix of that saw, you have a with of that saw a 1/24th, a fourth of a kav. A kav is, there are six kavim in a saw, so a fourth of a kav is 1/24th of the total mix. If 1/24th of the mix is min B, is type B, then that's already cloying, that's already a mix. And you have to bimai it, you have to rip it out so that it's less than that amount. That would already be considered cloying. Okay, you might, you make it less than that. Now note, there's different understandings of that Mishnah. Tosafot Yontif there understands that that's where it grew by itself. It grew by itself, so then you just have to make it less than 1/24th, and then it's not a problem. But if you planted it intentionally, you have to rip out the whole thing. Not everyone learns like that. Let's see. So we say, so that's the amount.
The stuff that's mixed is usher, though, or it's batal? Less than 1/24th.
The less than that, it's mutter, whatever it is. It's batal or it's mutter. It's not clear. Yeah. See the Tosafot Yontif there, because he deals with that. He's the way he expresses it. It's batal or mutter. Ayin sham the Tosafot Yontif. The Mefarshim Mishnah has to deal with that. But Tanya. We ask, did they really go and rip out the klayim on Chol HaMoed or on the 15th day of Adar? It says in the prices, they made it to Kana to be mafkir the entire field. Right? They were mafkir the field. They basically came, this person has klayim, all, not the field itself, he still owns the field, but all produce of that field of this year, hefker. It's public, it's ownerless. They were able to, because of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. Bezdin has the ability to remove ownership of property from an individual and make it up for grabs. Ve'atanya, we learned in the Bryce, says, Kino Shiyim Afkimi Kolok Sada Kulu. That's what they would do. They wouldn't rip it out. They would just be Mafka the Sada. So the claim's not owned by anybody. Lokashia. We say it's no Kashia. Kan Kodim Tekana Kan Lacha Tekana. That was the Tekana that they made at a later point. The Tanya, the Belinda, the Brisa, but Rishona, how you okren and Ashlichim lifnei behemten. Originally, they would send out shluchim, they would send out these messengers who would rip out the klayim and throw it onto the field. They would rip it out and throw it onto the ground. They would leave it on the ground. And the behemas of the animals, livestock, whatever, of the owners of the field would come and they would eat it. So v'hayu bali batim smeichin shtei simchis. So the owners of the field were happy in two ways. It benefited them in two ways. One, achas shemenakshin lahem sadusei, and one is they were weeding out the fields. I mean, okay, they may have wanted it there, but at the end of the day, if you're taking it out, it's benefiting the other crop that's still remaining. They're weeding out the field. And the second is that they left it before the behemoths to come and take it. Heskinu shiyu oikrin mashlichin al drachim. So what did they do? They made the next step. They made a takana. When you rip out the klayim, throw it on the road. Throw it onto the highway. Don't leave it for the animals to eat. And they thought that would be enough, that it would be enough to bounce it off. But ve'adayin ha'yusmeichin simcha gedola shemanakshin sadusein. Still, it didn't deter them. They didn't feel bad about it. They were still besimcha on it. That at the end of the day, it was benefiting them. Great, they're coming. Okay, my field ultimately will grow because they'll be weeding out the field. Like they thought they would make them feel bad enough, and it didn't. They didn't care. Heskinu shiyim afkirin kolasad akulas. What did they do? They made it the kana that all produce of a field that has klayim in it at this point is hefker. Okay, and that apparently ended it. All right, says the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Moshchin es hamayim. Oh, on that last halacha of being mafkir the sada. So there's a discussion. Does that mean it was automatically hefker? It was automatically hefker. And the shluchim, when they would come out, apparently shluchim would still come out, right, on the 15th. But does that mean that they used to uproot it and then they were mafkir it? So does that mean that they would come out to inspect it every year, and then Bezdin would make it hefker if the shluchim identified a field as, oh, it has klayim, and Bezdin would come and make it hefker every year, every field, each case individually? Or was it a blank takana that a field that has klayim in it is hefker, and the shluchim were just sent out to identify which fields have it and thus are hefker? But it wasn't each field wasn't done as a separate psak Bezdin to make it hefker. And that's a discussion, the Drisha learns this basically. If I'm right, he's learning as a machlokas as the Torah in the Beis Yosef. Was it a separate, was it one takana they made of, if you have klayim in it, your field is hefker, and it automatically became hefker once it has klayim in it, and you didn't uproot it by this date, when the shluchim would go out, and the shluchim would just go out to identify, is this field, which fields are hefker? from the original Takana? Or did the Shluchim go out to identify which fields have Kloyim for Bezdin to make it Hefker, each case individually? There's no Nafkamina. It's just the way the Torah says, and the Beis Yosef has a question, the Torah answers the question, but it's interesting. The Chazon Ish has a rule in learning. He says you can't make a Chakira if there's no Nafkamina. That's his rule. If there's no Akum from Akum Lamaisa, no Nafkamina Lamaisa, you're not allowed to make Chakiras. It's a big rule.
What
so,
do you do with, say you have Kloyim, and there's a product that comes out of it.
There probably is enough.
It's missed.
Yeah.
Can I eventually eat it? Am I allowed to eat the product of Kloyim that I, it's there, it just happened, and the fact it grows yet another generation.
So that's a Benoah.
What do you do? Can you eat it?
I don't think so. I don't know.
For example, we eat certain fruits right now.
It's a good question. Me and you are going to go through it after this year. I should know. I don't know. We're going to go through Maseches Kloyim a little bit. We'll look that up. That's a good question. I think it is, but it's being recorded, so I don't want to say the wrong answer. We'll look it up afterwards. All right. Otherwise, I would take a stand on it. All right, let's go. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, we'll look it up. We'll talk this year, really. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Moshchen Esamayim Ilan Leilan. You can move the water from one tree to another tree. Again, trees, even in a field that is sustainable in rainwater alone, the trees always need to be watered constantly. They are not. So we're dealing with a field that is sustainable in rainwater alone. You have water on one of the trees. You can move that water, spread that water that's been, congregated. That's what I was looking for, a big word. So fine. Aggregated. It's congregated by one tree. You can move it to the second tree because, again, that's an idea of allowing you to water the trees which need to be watered. As long as you do not water the field. Again, dealing with a Beis Habal, a field that it doesn't need to be watered. It will survive. So there's no hesed. There's no potential loss incurred if you don't water it. The trees will incur a loss if you do not water them. Therefore, it's permissible according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Zeroyim, similar rule according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Zeroyim shaloshasu lifnei amoyed lo yashkim b'moyed. Right? Different types of grains, produce that was not shaloshasu lifnei amoyed. That wasn't used to taking so much water. They didn't have a high water intake. Before Chol HaMoed, they would be able to survive with being watered once every 2 weeks. So those, Liyashkim B'moed. Similarly, you can't water them on the Moed because they'll survive without being watered. So you can't water them. Great. And the Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is in accordance with the Mishnah in the beginning of our Masechta. In fact, if anyone remembers, on the base of the base, we offered him as a possible potential candidate for who is the Mishnah, but we said it's not enough, that he doesn't be able to see enough from this halacha, and therefore we came out that our Mishnah was Rabbi Yehuda. And I mentioned that because we're going to bring that in a little bit in the next Mishnah. Fine. The Chachamim and the Chachamim, who are Rabbi Meir, who, if anyone remembers, was brought at the end of base of the base, in the beginning of the Masechta, who held that you can water a Beis Habal. You're allowed to water fields whether there's a potential loss involved or not. The Chumim matir in zeh b'zeh u'b'zeh. The Chumim permitted watering a field that doesn't need to be watered. It's not going to incur a loss if you don't water it. You won't incur a loss from that. And to water produce that for its basic survival wouldn't normally need to be watered at this point. He permitted it. He permitted watering a field that is sustainable in rainwater alone. It doesn't need to. You can do it laharvacha, as just simply for the profit, for the extra benefit of watering it even more, you're allowed to do that. When Chol HaMoed, according to the Chumim, was the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, im hayis asad metunenes mutter. If the field was a field that was originally sustainable in rainwater alone, but it's because that field was specifically moist, either the climate caused it to be more moist naturally, or there was an underground water source that increased its moisture. And then it's a sada mitunenes, it's moist. And then it dried up, that either the climate changed or the underground water source ceased, mutter. It's mutter to water such a field. Because again, it's used to receiving a normal amount of water, even though normally you would not have to water it. But it is used to receiving this amount of water, and now it's not receiving it. Mutter, it's mutter to water such a field on Chol HaMoed, because again, that would be a case of potential loss if you don't. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned in the Brisa as well. Kisha Amru, Asr Lashkoisin B'moed, when they said it's Asr to water a field on Chol HaMoed, Lo Amru, Ela Bizroyim, Shaloshosu Malif Neyamoyed, Aval Zroyim Shashosu Lif Neyamoyed, Mutter Lashkoisin B'moed. Same halacha. When they said you can't order filling chalamoid, it's only by produce that did not receive a regular high amount of water. They weren't regulated in a high amount of water before chalamoid. But produce that was regulated, shishasu, they would normally receive a high amount of water, meaning they may have been, it was produce that may have been sustainable, whatever. I mean, not sustainable, but it was the type of produce that needed a certain level of water, and without you watering it, it's not going to receive that level that it's regulated in, then you may be mashke them b'moyed, right? You may water them on chalamoed. Mutter lashkoiz b'moyed. V'im hayas asadim etunenes mutter. And if there was a field, that was just the case of produce, same case with the field. If the field was originally moist, that's used to being of a certain moisture, and now it doesn't have that moisture, mutter, it's mutter for you to water the field. Again, these are cases where the field of the produce is not receiving its normal amount of water. You, therefore, have to water it to give it its normal amount of water. Otherwise, we will incur a loss. There it's mutter, but they mashkin sada garid b'moyed. But a sada, a field, that is normally dry, right? And it's not used to receiving so much water. It'll be fine there. Ein mashkin. You cannot, sada garid is a dry field. You cannot water this dry field on chalamoid. The chachamim matirin b'zeh b'zeh. And again, Rabbi Meir, the chachamim, said it's permissible even if it'll survive. You want to water it to give it extra water than it's normally regulated in for the purpose of extra growth, enhancing the growth, permissible. It's just showing in that brisa the halacha that we brought above. Amar Avina, says Avina, Shema Minos, we see from that halacha that according to the Chachamim, Hai Tarbitza Shara Litabutze Bechulat Amoed, that a garden can be, you can put a sprinkler to a garden on Chol Amoed, sprinkled, Tarbutze, Bechulat Amoed on Chol Amoed. Fine. Why? Because Sada Garid, my timer, why do they say that you can water a dry field? That it doesn't need to be dry, it doesn't need to be watered, it can survive, it's normally dry. So my time, why did the Chum say that you can water such a field? The afla meshave lo charfa, because otherwise it would be weak, and now you're making it stronger, you're making it better, you're enhancing the field, you're allowed to water to enhance the field. So achinami afla meshave lo charfa. So there, for the vegetables in the garden, even though the garden may be okay, without the water, you're allowed to have the sprinkler running in order to enhance the produce that it should be stronger. Okay, and that's again only by the Chachamim. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in the Brisa, Marbitz and Sada Lavan B'Shvias. You can sprinkle a Beis Habal, a field that could be sustainable in rainwater alone during Shemitah, Avalo B'Moed, but not during Chol HaMoed. You can't do it on Chol HaMoed, according to this Brisa. B'Hotanya, Abu Lin and Brisa, Marbitz and Bein B'Moed, Bein B'Shvias. You may sprinkle a field both on Chol HaMoed and on Shvias. Again, this would be a Sadeh, a stay loving is a base of Baal. It's a field that's sustainable in rainwater alone. You may sprinkle it, so can you or can't you? Very simple answer. Amar Rav Huna, lo kasha har b'lis ben Yaakov har Rabbanan. That's our machlokas tanoim, if you can water such a field. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov would say no. On Chalamoid, you can't. Apparently on Shemitah, it's okay. We'll go into no. Har Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan hold that on Chalamoid, you can sprinkle a field that doesn't need to be watered. Tanya Eidach. We'll also learn another brisa. Marbitz and Sada Lovin Erev Shvias Kedei Shiyotzu Yerakas B'Shvias. You may sprinkle a field, a Beis Habal, a field that's sustainable in rainwater alone, a Stei Lovin Erev Shvias, one Erev Shvias Kedei Shiyotzu Yerakas B'Shvias, in order that Yerakas, in order that vegetables should grow on Shemitah. V'lo'od Elish Marbitz and Sada Lovin B'Shvias. And also you may sprinkle such a field with water on Shemitah in order to promote the growth of your ruckus vegetables after Shemitah. Sounds like you cannot, however, be marbits the Sada Lovin on Shemitah for the produce of Shemitah. You can do it before or after. And this is a complicated halacha because of, A, it's how can you water on Shemitah for after Shemitah? Again, before Shemitah, only Cheresh is Aser. Zriya, Hashkah, all that stuff is Mutter. I think it's only Cheresh that's Aser. But what are on Shemitah after Shemitah? Well, they're Svichei Shvias. They're crap that grew by itself in Shvias, which still is a din of produce of Shemitah. So how can you work them on Shemitah after Shemitah? They're still Aser. So some say they're only Aser Be'achila. They're not, that Svichei Shvias have certain kulas. I'm not going to go into what it is exactly. Some answer that A lot of them ask, a lot of them discuss this. What exactly is the halacha? Moshe Feinstein asks the following question. He asks, how can you do malacha on Shemitah to benefit after Shemitah? You can't work a field on Shemitah. So who cares if it's for the benefit of after Shemitah? He says the following. He says, you're not allowed to plow a field, Erev Rosh Hashanah of the seventh year, going to the eighth year, Erev Rosh Hashanah of the eighth year, you can't plow a field because you're still plowing a field on Shemitah, which is Aser, Becharsh, Bekatzar Tishpes. So through here, how can you water a field? So he says the following. He says, watering is not an actual working of the field. Plowing is working. Even if the productive aspect, the goal of the plowing isn't seen until after Shemitah, the act of plowing is work. You're working the field. You're doing something. Watering the field is not working. It's only considered to be working. It's only its productive outcome that defines it as work. And therefore, if you were to water a field on Shemitah, that will only benefit the produce of after Shemitah, it's not called working the field on Shemitah. That's what he says. Okay. Says the Mishnah, next Mishnah. I wish I could be clear on that, but that's like a whole thing. Artscroll may have a note on that. I don't know. That last Brisa makes sense of that. About this issue of Svich, of Svich and Shvias. Let's see. Tzadin esa ishes v'esa achbarim misadeh ha'ilan. One is allowed misadeh ha'lovin. Kedarka b'moyde b'shvias. One is allowed to trap esa ishos. We'll see they are basically a mole. That's what it sounds like to me. V'esa achbarim, or the mice. From a sada ha'ilan and a sada ha'lovin, either from a tree, a field of trees, a base which would be a base shlochin, from a sada ha'lovin, or from a field of normal produce that could be sustained in rainwater alone, i.e., a base ha'bal. Kidarko, you can trap them in a normal manner, in your normal way that you would trap them. B'moyed b'shvias, you may trap them on cholamoid and on shmita. So again, these animals, why? Because these animals are destructive to the field, so it's a potential loss if they're around. You have to trap them, and therefore you're allowed to trap them even without a shinoi, even in your normal method of trapping, because, again, this would be a malacha that's permissible because of davar aved, that it may come to a potential loss if you don't. The chachamim omrim, the chachamim say, mistea ilan kedarko, mistea lovin shalo kedarko. The chachamim say from a pesa shlochin, a steha ilan that is not sustainable in rainwater alone, you may trap it in its normal manner, but from a steha lovin, from a pesa ba, which is sustainable in rainwater alone, such a field, there shalo kedarko. You have to trap it in an unusual manner. Now note, why is that? Because it's the field is stronger. It's a stronger field, a beis habal. It's more, i.e. a stay halovin, a field that's sustainable in rainwater alone. So it's not as susceptible to loss. Therefore, you may only trap it shalo kedarko. Now, the what should be flashing here is the chachamim we mentioned before was Rabbi Meir, and he holds you can even water a base a stay halovin. You can even water a base habal. So he doesn't make any distinction that base habal should be any more strict than a stay halovin. I'm sorry, than a stay ilan, than a base shlochin. So if you look at the Hagos v'tziyunim that they have here, they bring in Rabbi Yehuda. They take out the Chachamim and they say instead you should be Geris Rabbi Yehuda, who was the opinion of a previous Mishnah that you can only water a base shlochin, you may not water a base habal. And that would make a little more sense. Okay. If you have a breakdown in the fence, you may rebuild. You may rebuild, restabilize a small breakdown in the fence. Right? If it's a small breakdown, you can patch it up. And on Shemitah, you may build initially the fence. Even or if it's totally gone, you can just rebuild it from scratch. That part. Fine. Okay. Says the Gemara. Hopefully we'll go through that in the Gemara here. Says the Gemara, my Ishis, what is Ishis? What animal is that you're allowed to trap this animal in any field because it will cause loss to the field? Amar Rav Yehuda, it's a Birish in Lainayim. It's a type of animal that doesn't have eyes. That's what it is, seemingly a mole. Amar Rav Bar Yishmael, says Rav Bar Yishmael, v'simer Rav Yemar Bar Shamaya, and some say it was said, Rav Yemar Bar Shamaya said it, Rav Yemar the son of Shamaya. My crow, where do we see this in the Pasuk, that Ishos means this animal that doesn't have eyes? The Pasuk says, Kemo Shablul Temes Yahalech, Nufel Eshes Balchazu Shemesh. The Pasuk says that just like the shablu, which is a type of snail or something, when it leaves its shell, Temes Yahalech, it will melt. It'll start to dissolve as it walks. Nufel Eshes Balchazu Shemesh. So too, the Eshes will fall, Balchazu Shemesh. It will stumble because it can't see the light. So it's bound to get hurt. That's the idea. So we see the Eshes is this that can't see the sun, and that's the Lashon Eshos in plural. These moles. Tana Rabbanan, Sadin Esa Eshos VeEsa Achbara Mistei Alavin Mistei Linkadarko Umachriven Chari Namalin. We say in the price you're allowed to trap again moles and mice from any field in the normal manner of trapping it. Umachriven Chari Namalim, and you may destroy ant holes. Ketzad in the field. Ketzad Machriven, how do you destroy an ant hole? Rabban Shimon Begum Li Aloimer, maybe Afar Mechor Zev, and those saying Latoch Chor Zev. Vehein Chaynkin Zeh Zeh. You take dirt from one of the ant holes, you put it in the other ant hole, they smell the dirt, they don't recognize it, they get violent, and they kill kill the other ants. this is intense. So, right. Don't tell this to any 10-year-old kids, but that's the idea. Rashi says, actually, in the Ksav Yad, he says they would actually take the dirt with the ants in it and put them into the ant hole. That makes a little more sense, because we'll see it's kind of hard for them to get to each other. But we'll see. Amar of Yemar Bar Shamaya Mishmei De'Abaye. Now again, this is only going to be where those ants aren't familiar with the other ants. So it's strange to them, it angers them. If they're used to them, they know the other ants, they recognize it because they smell the dirt. That's how they do it. They smell the dirt, and they smell the other ants. And if it smells familiar, they're not going to attack. But if they don't recognize it, they will attack. Amar of Yemar Bar Shamaya Mishmei De'Abaye. Mehu De'Kai Betrei Avrei Nara. This is talking where they don't recognize the smell of the dirt of the other ants, that they stand on two separate sides of a river. One ant hole is on one side of the river, the other ant hole is on the other side of the river. Who the lake of Geshara? And that's only if there's no bridge in between the river. Who the lake of Gemala? Or there's no board, forget a bridge, not even a board, a single board around across the river to walk over. Who the lake of Metzara? Or even if there isn't a tightrope across the river. If there's any of those, then the ants would have traveled through that, and they would recognize each other, and they wouldn't become violent through smelling this unusual dirt. So ad kama, how distant do they have to be, even with the river splitting between them? Rashi learns, in Tosfos also one lashon, that even with the river splitting in between them, and no bridge, and no way of getting to each other, they still have to be of a certain distance to not recognize each other. Apparently, they smell very well, apparently. Ad kama, so how far distant? Ad parsa, until a parsa. That's how far it has to be. If there's a parsa, if there's less than a parsa distance between the two ant holes, even if there's a river with no way of traveling across it, they still will recognize the smell. That's not going to be an efficient method. Okay, so we'll go start tomorrow, Daf Zion. Okay.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.